home. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Over the past few months, we have done several shows about how the COVID crisis has affected farm workers and meatpacking workers, some of the most exploited and underpaid employees in the country. A number of those workers share their stories in the new Frontline documentary, Coven's Hidden Toll. Some spoke on camera, others wanted to remain anonymous for fear of losing their jobs. They all said they have no choice but to go to work, even if a coworker is infected, because they have to provide for their families. Social distancing is impossible, and because the federal government has failed to implement federal guidelines, many have to provide their own protective equipment. A young man who works for Central Valley Meat in California, one of the country's largest meat processing companies, says, "It doesn't feel like we're essential workers. It feels like we're slaves." According to the Food and Environment Reporting Network, more than 40,000 meatpacking and food processing workers and 4,535 farm workers have tested positive. 188 workers have died. Farms in 15 states have reported positive cases, according to the National Center for Farm Worker Health. In the farm labor community of Immokalee, Florida, more than 1,000 cases have been documented in recent weeks. The Frontline documentary, COVID's Hidden Toll, airs tonight on PBS at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. And here is the trailer.
They are the essential workers.
I started getting lightheaded. My chest starting to hurt. I couldn't really breathe.
In the factories and farms.
They're more exposed to other people. A lot of them do, in fact, live in fear.
Producing America's food supply.
Co-worker showed up to work and she was coughing. She was threatened with her job if she didn't show up to work.
Frontline investigates.
It doesn't feel like we're essential. It feels like we're slaves.
Tune in or stream on PBS starting July 21st.
Today's guests, Daffodil Altun and Andre Sedyal, wrote, produced, and directed Frontline's new film, COVID's Hidden Toll. It airs tonight on PBS at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Daffodil Altun is an investigative journalist and Emmy-nominated producer and correspondent. She's been reporting on the undocumented community for years. Daffodil produced, directed, and was the correspondent for the Frontline documentary, Kids Caught in the Crackdown and Trafficked in America. She also produced the Emmy-nominated Frontline Univision documentary, Rape on the Night Shift, which led to legislative reform in California, Oregon, and Washington. Daffodil is also a lecturer at the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. Hi, Daffodil. Thank you so much for making another great documentary, and thanks for joining us again.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Andres Sedyal, a documentary filmmaker and professor of visual journalism at UC Berkeley. Andres produced Rape in the Fields and was a writer and producer of Rape on the Night Shift. Those two films won a DuPont Columbia Journalism Award, the RFK Grand Prize for Journalism, and were nominated for 4 national Emmys. Hi, Andres. Thank you so much also for making this film, and thanks for coming on again.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thank you both. I mean, you made this during the COVID pandemic, which I'm sure was really difficult. Daffodil, you've been reporting on the immigrant community for years. And in the film, you said that you heard from workers who said that they had to choose between their jobs and their health. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so being based here in California, as we all know, we were the first state to shelter in place and go into lockdown. And so we almost immediately, once it was announced that there was going to be an essential workforce, that there were industries that were going to be essential, that would not stop working, and agriculture was one of those industries, we kind of immediately started asking ourselves, what was that going to mean? Because if anything, our years of reporting has showed us that this is, one of the most unprotected, vulnerable worker populations. You know, we've done labor trafficking, we've reported on sexual assault in the agricultural industry. So we immediately wanted to know and were thinking about what was this going to mean. And what we started hearing from, longtime sources of ours who had been in some of our previous films, and as we started to do some early research and reporting, what we were beginning to understand was that the harvest was coming. Major harvests in California were set to overlap with this spike in cases across the country. And so we wanted to know, and we were thinking about, what is this going to mean for this worker population? And so that's what kind of set us off on our reporting. And once we started talking to workers, we realized, okay, this is another essential workforce, just like healthcare workers, law enforcement workers, who have not been able to stop working, who have to keep going to work, and we're continuing to go to work as we were all, most of us, sheltering in place. And so what we were hearing was, we don't have the gear, the protection that we need. We are scared. We don't know what will happen if we get sick, if there's an outbreak. We haven't heard anything. And so what, you know, the picture that was beginning to emerge was that as infections were going to go up, if infections erupted in the agricultural community, it was potentially going to be a very precarious situation.
And Andres, as you always do, you really get incredible access. What struck me about the documentary, it's one thing to read quotes from the workers. It's another experience altogether to actually hear directly from the workers. And in the film, some workers are on camera. Some wanted to remain anonymous for fear of losing their jobs. Can you talk a little bit about how you got such incredible access and interviewed so many workers?
Well, one of the ways that we did that, the primary way, is that we put together a really great team of bilingual reporters and cinematographers and crew. These were people, Maria Jose Calderon, one of the co-producers, Victor Tadashi Suarez, a cinematographer, and a group of UC Berkeley graduate students who were going out into the fields and building these relationships. Normally, when we do films like this and we're trying to build relationships in the undocumented community, it takes a lot of time. There's a lot of trust that has to be built. This usually comes from sitting and having coffee or meeting the family or coming over for a meal. There's lots of reasons why people in vulnerable positions don't want to talk to the media. So we have to spend that time to build the trust. And that was something that was very difficult to do under these situations for lots of different COVID reasons in terms of how close you could get to somebody. It's difficult to share a meal. But this crew is very adept at building these relationships very quickly and getting to find the people who wanted to tell their stories. This is always a situation in which it's difficult to convince somebody in a vulnerable situation to speak out because they have so much to lose. It can be their livelihood. It can be their status here in this country. In this case, even health reasons. But having talked to a lot of people, there was several characters who were brave enough to want to tell their story. And so it has to do with finding those people who are willing to tell that story.
Well, huge thanks to your entire team for working on this, especially during a pandemic. One of the overall themes, it seemed, Daffodil, is the workers said, we have no choice but to work, even if we know that a coworker is sick, because we have to feed our families and pay rent. In fact, Cynthia Hernandez, who has cancer, she's got two children, she lives with her mom and two disabled siblings. She said, we have so much debt and bills to pay, sometimes we don't have enough left over to just buy one mask.
Yeah,
so Cynthia Hernandez is one of the most incredible characters and people we've ever really met. And her story is emblematic of what so many people are going through. But Cynthia is particularly significantly burdened. Like you said, she does have cancer. She has diabetes. She lives with family members who have vulnerable health conditions that would put them at high risk for complications if any of them contract COVID-19. And the situation that, you know, Cynthia articulates so well is that she doesn't have a choice but to work. She's making a sacrifice because her family needs to eat, even though when the shelter-in-place orders were issued in the state, she, like all the rest of us, wanted to stay home. She wanted to stay home to protect her family, to protect herself, to protect their health, but she could not. Not only because she couldn't, because she was deemed essential and she had to keep working, but also in order for her family to eat, in order for her to be able to keep the house that they all live in, she had to work. So it's this corner that you know, agricultural workers are backed into because they make so little. And, you know, less than $30,000 a year on average. Women make significantly less. So, you know, Cynthia was in the situation where she didn't have a choice but to work as much as she wanted to stay home and shelter like the rest of us. And that daily psychological battle of, having to force yourself into a work situation where you don't know if you could become infected that day is really tremendously taxing. And I think on all essential workers who have never stopped working during the pandemic, this has been tremendously taxing. All the fear, all the anxiety. The difference, what we were finding here, is that a lot of the workers didn't have even the basics to protect themselves at work and could hardly afford the basics to protect themselves at work.
Andres, in the case of Cynthia, who is a broccoli picker in the Salinas Valley, a region in California that produces most of the country's leafy greens, she actually found out that two coworkers tested positive, but she says her foreman refused to tell her how they were going to handle it. And she's the only person in the house that can work. And her story is very common, that a lot of people were just left in the dark. They were all wondering, are you sick? Are you sick? And then they just didn't get the information from their bosses.
Yeah, one of the things that was surprising to me is normally doing stories about farm workers, a lot of the context is that farm workers don't have all the same worker rights as other workers do. But this was a situation in which it was revelatory to me that we're all in the same boat here in terms of what our employers are allowed to tell us or can tell us or are obligated to tell us about outbreaks at work. So when there are outbreaks at work, because of different privacy reasons, oftentimes the outbreak won't be told to the employees about who's sick. Now, in some cases, the people who are immediately around that person are supposed to be told so they can go quarantine, but the rest of the workers don't know what's going on. And what we saw over and over again is that this led to a lot of fear and paranoia, because then rumors start to spread about we heard that so-and-so's sick or so-and-so might have been sick, and trying to get information and not getting a lot of information. And there's not good standards across the industry or from company to company explaining what to do when these outbreaks happen. So what happens is when these outbreaks break out, people start to wonder, are they sick? How do I get tested? Can I get tested? I can't take off work to go get tested. My employer's not going to pay for me to get tested. I mean, going back to the how economically precarious a lot of these people live, you know, a test might cost $40, $50. They don't have $40, $50, much less being able to take time off work to go get it. So there's a whole range of issues in terms of how this industry is dealing with when outbreaks happen and how the workers are responding to it.
To add to that, Daffodil, you point out in the film that public health officials said they don't release information on specific companies. It was hard for you to find any information at all about where farm workers were actually getting sick.
Yeah, and this is something that's actually playing out across the country. In agricultural counties, across the country, you have a situation where you may have large agricultural employers there, but and these very small, public health departments that are trying to navigate the coronavirus crisis and outbreaks. And so where, and as contact tracing has gotten better, what counties are doing, there's this back and forth that has to happen between companies and counties, who tells who. If an employee gets tested and turns up positive, the county will contact the company to begin contact tracing efforts. But the company is not required to tell a county if they've had an outbreak. It's really the individual worker. That's how the information begins to get to the county. So, again, companies have the option of whether they want to inform the county, but counties on their own, through their contact tracing work, is how they tend to identify and gather the data around where workers are getting sick, where the clusters are, where there are potential outbreaks at companies. But what we've seen is that it across the state, and this applies to the rest of the country, it really varies what a county does in terms of releasing information. And what public health experts have told us is that we're in a pandemic right now. All information is critical. All information is necessary. And really getting that information out to the public so people can understand where the infections are happening and how they can best protect themselves and how to best trace the source of infections is really critical. And so you know, it's become a somewhat polarizing issue what counties do when it comes to specific companies. Some counties do release company information once the infection level reaches a certain threshold. But again, without any uniformity, without a blanket requirement that all counties have to do X, the information is incredibly uneven, and it's hard to really get a grasp and understand what the infection rate is within the agricultural community, but also within any industry.
Andres, can you also remind us what happened in terms of the government and the federal government and what it deemed essential, and then the executive order that happened? So farm workers and meat worker plant workers were deemed essential. And then once we started seeing the outbreaks, these plants started to close. But as you report in the documentary, in April, Donald Trump signed an executive order saying that the decision around whether to close or reopen plants should be driven by the federal government, not local authorities. And the New York Times reports that this happened after weeks of lobbying behind the scenes, specifically by Tyson, which is a chicken, beef, and pork processor that generates about $40 billion in annual revenue.
Yeah, so there's a lot of controversy and confusion about what the executive order actually does or does not do. Some people who have looked at it say it doesn't actually do anything, though there's also interpretations that what it was meant to do was to clear meatpacking plants from any liability if their workers were to contract COVID so that they wouldn't get sued. But what is clear is that the executive order sent a signal to the meatpacking plants that they could stay open without fear. Up until that point, there were meatpacking plants shutting down because of these huge outbreaks, hundreds and hundreds of people being sick. And then after this executive order was signed, the meatpacking plants just basically stayed open. And this occurred across the country. It occurred at Central Valley Meat, where we were profiling some workers. And so what this sent was that the message that we're just going to keep producing meat no matter what. Now, at the time, it was being said that, you know, this is critical to our nation's food supply. Reporting that has come out since shows that during this time, a lot of these companies were making record profits by sending exports to China. So that, in fact, a lot of this continued food supply and putting workers at risk who continue to get sick and continue to die was actually not for the American food supply, but to make money sending food to China. I think one of the things that's been disturbing and along the lines of not having a lot of data is, though there was a lot of reporting back in late April and early May about these outbreaks at companies, the data that is available is showing that these outbreaks are continuing and that workers are getting sick at these plants. They go home, but then other workers come in to replace them, and then those workers are getting sick. And so there's just a continued cycle of people continuing to get sick. Now, a lot of these plants are saying that now they have safety measures, which they didn't before, and these safety measures are completely voluntary. OSHA, the federal agency that regulates workplace safety, has recommendations for these work sites, but there's nothing mandatory right now in terms of what companies have to do to protect their workers from COVID.
Andres Sedyal and Daffodil Alton wrote, produced, and directed the new Frontline documentary, COVID's Hidden Toll. It airs tonight on PBS at 7 p.m. Pacific time, and it explores how the COVID crisis has affected farm workers and meat packing workers. If you have a question or a comment for today's guests, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. You can also tweet us at yourcallradio. Daffodil, OSHA declined to speak with you, but said the voluntary guidelines are enough to protect workers. So let's take a look at what's happening, for example, at Taylor Farms, a multi-billion dollar corporation in the Salinas Valley. They've got 20,000 employees across the country. They sell lettuce to Walmart and Whole Foods. And as you report in the film, they put out videos talking about all of the protective measures they were taking. But when an employee tested positive at their flagship organic packing plant, workers said that the company sent a different message. One worker actually videotaped an HR manager addressing employees who refused to work. Can you tell us about what you learned in that video? Do we still have
Hi, Rose. Daffodil? Yes, oh, I'm still there. Okay. I'm still here. And I'm unfortunately going to have to jump off soon for a different interview, but I think Andres can pick up where I leave off. I think one of the things that's most revealing about the undercover footage we got from Taylor Farms, the video that was shot by an employee, is you get to watch and witness how complicated the situation is for everyone involved, for the grower, the company, for the workers, and really you see a manager who's kind of in the middle here, who's trying to talk down employees who are understandably so afraid. They're so nervous. And the message that they're hearing and that they're getting, essentially, is you don't have to go back into the plant and work. It's okay if you don't want to go back to work, but if you don't go back in, you will need to go upstairs and you will need to fill out a form and voluntarily quit. So I think the message that sent to employees was, you can quit your job if you're too scared to go back to work. And it created even more anxiety, more turmoil, because they were just terrified of how many people might be infected. Am I infected? What's going on? And I think this goes back to what Andres was saying earlier in terms of what you can and can't know at a workplace. I think a lot of people don't necessarily want to know who. They just want to know what is happening and what is going to happen moving forward. And the immediate response they were getting in the scene that you kind of watch unfold is, you know, it is safe to go back inside, but if you don't want to go back inside, here are your options. And the options that are being given to workers who really live paycheck to paycheck to quit your job doesn't add up. And so you really get a sense for, you know, what happens when there isn't sort of an established protocol for what a company must do in this situation, what workers know a company must do. And so it unfolds in this sort of, you know, chaotic way with a lot of questions and a lot of anxiety and not a lot of resolution for workers who really do want to keep working, but they want to feel like they're safe.
Right. Well, Daffodil, I know we have to let you go. So thank you again so much for your great work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Daffodil Alton is an investigative journalist and Emmy-nominated producer and correspondent with Frontline. Her latest film that she made with Andres Sedial and an incredible team is called COVID's Hidden Toll. It airs tonight on PBS at 7 p.m. Pacific time. Andres, before we go to a break, Taylor Farms, again, a multi-billion-dollar company in the Salinas Valley refused to be interviewed. And you report in the film that all but a handful of the 250 workers returned to their shift. They said, using fear, they practically pushed us back inside to work.
Yeah, that was the situation. I think it was, you know, relatively early on in the pandemic, and there's still so little information at that time about how the virus was spread. So these were workers, about 250, who showed up for their Sunday morning shift, because there was a big order that they needed to fill, and that they had heard through the grapevine that one of the workers was sick and believed he had COVID. So the workers show up, and they're scared to go into the plant. They don't know, is the virus in the plant? Are they going to get sick? Who else has been infected? Am I infected? What should we do? There was a lot of confusion and fear, and so the HR manager came out to talk to them and explain to them all the measures that Taylor Farms had been doing to keep the plant clean, how that everything had been wiped down, how everything was safe. I was able to speak to the HR manager. He did not go on camera, but he said that he believed that it was safer in the plant than anywhere else that you could be. You know, the film shows how Taylor Farms has a video in which they talk about all their safety measures, and they truly believe that's a safe place to work. I think one of the things the scene also shows is that for a lot of essential workers, people have signed up to be. So, for instance, if you're a healthcare worker, you know, a friend of mine is a doctor, and he's, you know, for him, taking this risk is what he signed up for. And what you see here is a lot of workers who didn't sign up for this. they're doing this because they need to, and now they have a lot of fear about whether they're going to go in or not. Ultimately, they all did go in, except for a few handful, and the choice was basically that if you don't go in, you're laid off is effectively what it means, and you could be rehired again. But again, these workers don't have the option to take a day off or to take a week off, so they had to go in and take the risk. And we've been following up with them. Again, it's very hard to get numbers from companies about how many infections there are, but we can track them on in Monterey County, where Salinas is. They do release numbers based on the industry. So it's one of the few counties in which we can see that agriculture is being disproportionately represented in the number of cases. In a recent report by the California Institute for Rural Studies analyzing Monterey County, found that farm workers were contracting COVID three times more than other workers. So clearly there's something that's particularly makes farm workers more vulnerable than other people, whether it's the work site, whether it's how people are living in crowded housing, whether it's the crowded transportation that they use to get to work. But it's very clear that this community is much more vulnerable. There is another study out of UC San Diego that came out recently, which analyzed every county in the U.S. where there's been COVID deaths and studied all the different factors that might be in terms of poverty, in terms of English language in the home. And what the study was able to do was it was able to pinpoint that in counties where there are more farm workers, the more farm workers there are in the county, every increased percentage in farm workers is correlated to more people dying of COVID. Now, what the study can't say is that those increased numbers of people dying are farm workers, but it's clearly pointing to that there's more vulnerability in these communities of people being able, of people contracting the virus, and then people actually ending up dying from the virus. So there's a lot of work to be done to understand more, but there's not a lot of data out there, but there's clearly a big problem.
You did interview Christopher Valadez, president of the Grower Shipper Association of Central California, and he said they are opposed to companies having to publicly disclose their COVID cases. He says it doesn't look good. It is bad press for the company.
That is what he said, and that's pretty much what all the companies we talk to feel. And I think the other thing that Chris Valadez mentioned, and so for instance, another company that was profiled in the piece, Tanimer and Antle, there was an early outbreak there where we talked to some of the first farm workers to get sick there. You know, there are things that the company might be doing to, you know, the company might be doing everything right is basically what he's saying, but people are still going to get sick. And that's one of the hard situations about the time we're living in, is that on some level people are going to get sick. And so how are the risks mitigated? How are people going to be taken care of? Now, from the journalistic point of view, our job is to make sure that there's transparency and there's numbers so we can discuss this. And so when companies don't release data, that becomes very hard for us to understand what's actually going on.
Right. So since you brought up Tanimarin Antle, this story came from Rosa, who is a truck driver, and she's very worried about what might happen in her family of produce workers. She says that there are 11 people living in one house, including four children. One has asthma. Her cousins were working for this large lettuce grower, Tanimarin Antle. She said that the company gave them masks and gloves, but it was very difficult to do the work and not get close because the workers are so close together. They're all using the same bathroom. They drink water from the same place. There's just no way to separate. And one person said that some of the people we would catch a ride with were already showing symptoms. Mm-hmm. And he heard that someone tested positive, but once again, the supervisors wouldn't give them any information.
Yeah, and that's one of the trickiest things I think that the agricultural industry has in terms of a challenge, is that even if you provide masks and gloves and work at work, and if you're out there picking depending on what the crop is, there is the possibility to have some sort of social distancing, and being outside obviously able to being inside. But it's very difficult because these work sites are often very far from where people live. So coworkers have to carpool to work. And so that means anywhere from sharing a ride with four people to 15 people in a van. So that becomes this a vulnerability spot for workers to get sick. And that's something that, from what we've seen, hasn't been figured out in terms of how to keep workers separated. Now, of course, the other issue that Rosa's family had, and this is true from a lot of farm workers, but particularly in Monterey County where housing prices are relatively high, it's not far from the Bay Area, is because farm workers make so little that they have to live together in crowded housing situations. She had 11 people living in her house. Three of them got COVID. What they ended up doing is that they put those three people in one bedroom and basically kept them shut in there for 2 weeks, and nobody else in the house got sick. But that was an incredible effort by that family, and they were also very lucky. Now, as soon as those 14 days were up, everybody went back to work, even if they didn't feel well. Again, this was early on in the pandemic, and recommendations were, okay, after 14 days, you're fine, go. But as we know, COVID symptoms can last much longer than that. And so when these folks were going back to work, they were still complaining about being sick. They were still fatigued. They were still not feeling well, but they couldn't stay home another day. In this case, they were paid to stay home for 14 days. So they were allowed to stay home with sick pay. But once the 14 days were up, they had to go back to work.
We're speaking today with Andre Sedyal, a documentary filmmaker. He and Daffodil Alton wrote, produced, and directed the new Frontline documentary, COVID's Hidden Toll. It airs tonight on PBS at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Andres, you also spoke with Dr. Max Cuevas. He runs a network of clinics in the area, but primarily serves farm workers. And he said, if one farm worker gets sick, you'll get an entire crew sick, which is typically 30 people. And then from there, it snowballs. He said that the bigger picture here is that the average American has no concept of how food reaches our table. We have no idea where the lettuce comes from. We have no idea how it's harvested. He says there's just such a disconnect between those of us who can shelter in place and those who have no choice but to be out in the meatpacking plants or on the farms to make a living.
I think that's always been true, and I think that this is another situation in which COVID is bringing to light these disparities in our society. I think, you know, one of the things for those of us who were lucky enough to shelter at home, one of the places that became a vulnerability was, you know, going to the grocery store. That was immediately, people were afraid, well, can I go to the grocery store? What's going to happen? Should I wear a mask? Should I wear gloves? And that was actually the last stage of where the food was getting to you. Where the food is being processed is far away and out of sight, and it's been that way for a long time, and it's very difficult to see what's going on, and very few people, if you're not from those communities, actually see how that work is done. I think one of the things that has come up during this whole situation was there was an immediate disruption in the food supply in terms of how much food, with restaurants shutting down, a lot of food processors were out of business. In terms of they didn't have places to sell their food. They couldn't easily transfer it over into different retail markets. So that there was also all of a sudden a lot less work. So then you have these farm workers who were essential workers and need to go to work, but then their hours were getting cut. And then now, as more farm workers are getting sick and more people are out, they're starting to see labor shortages in terms of employers not being able to find people to work because people are out. So it's become a very complicated mess in which workers are at the bottom trying to figure out how to even get food to eat, something that was also happening in Monterey County at the same time because of the shortages at the grocery stores, is that there's a lot of food insecurity. So then you found that there was a situation in which a lot of food workers, people who were actually picking the food, had to go to food banks to get food because they weren't making enough money and there wasn't enough food on the shelves. So this has always been a very vulnerable population, and this situation is just making it worse.
And one more question. Dr. Cuevas, his team began making masks and giving them out before dawn as workers were heading to the fields. We have a question from Sue. She's wondering if there's a way that we can donate masks to people. If there isn't a fund, she said she'd be glad to set up a GoFundMe if she could be connected with the right people.
That sounds like a great idea. I think that the Clínica de Salud del Valle de Salinas, which where Dr. Max Cuevas works, would be happy to talk to Sue about mask donations.
All right. Well, we will put a link on our website. Thank you so much, Andres, again, for your continued work. Huge thanks to your team for putting this incredible documentary together during the pandemic. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Andres Sedyal is a documentary filmmaker. He and Daffodil Alton wrote, produced, and directed the film COVID's Hidden Toll. It's a frontline documentary airing tonight on PBS at 7 p.m. One more point to make here. David Michaels, a former head of OSHA under the Obama administration, said the Trump administration could protect workers right now. They could issue an emergency regulation saying that employers must protect workers from COVID, but so far they have done just the opposite. You can watch the trailer to the film tonight, right now, and I hope you can watch it tonight and spread the word. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will talk about the violent federal crackdown happening in Portland, Oregon. The Trump administration is threatening to send agents to additional states. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.